Welcome to the Nerdtastic in 3D podcast.
It's Nerdtastic in 3D. Oh, it's Nerdtastic in 3D. Yes, it's Nerdtastic in 3D. It's Nerdtastic.
Bong.
Hi.
I got one eye in there.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Nerdtastic in 3D. Yay. Episode number 57.
Cinco seis.
Siete.
I'm pretty sure it's 56.
Is it?
Being the guy who handles most of that, I'm going to say it's 56.
I do the right, but I don't even know.
You didn't let me finish.
Minus, were you getting minus one?
I was just testing you.
At some point, we're going to have to stop listing the episode numbers because I can't remember. Nerdtastic in 3D is an entertainment industry podcast. We are entertainment industry veterans. Does that work?
Yeah.
I'd say we're veterans. How much experience do we have between us? 40-ish years?
So, I don't know. So, yeah, I'd say that.
I got like 10. You guys got like 15 piece?
I'm over 10.
I'm 11.
Okay, so we got like 30 years of experience.
All right.
How's
so
that?
By 10.
My name is Jason Carter. I am a stereoscopic supervisor with Disney Animation.
I'm Jack Geckler. I'm a crowds lead at DreamWorks Animation.
And I'm Josh Guacamole Lebrant. And I am a layout artist at DreamWorks Animation.
So what we are is a show. We occasionally do these long, fun intros. We are a show that pretty much just dedicates itself to being fun and nerdy, talking to you guys about anything that's animation, game industry related, current news, current events, film related, anything nerdy that we find, and we're just
shit that bothers us.
Yeah, you know what bothers me? The Cool Ranch taco.
Does that bother you? I have actually had it, and it is delicious.
Is it?
Yes.
The Cool Ranch?
Yes, I did.
Commercial was on last night. And I felt my mouth water. How could you not want that?
It was here's
in
the thing.
Your mouth.
I don't want it.
There's breasts and Corinth Doritos. Both make my mouth water. How do you not want those in your mouth? That's all I'm saying.
No, but
ladies and gentlemen, this has been Nerdtastic.
I'm Josh Avocado Lebrat.
Avocado, you changed it.
I went from guacamole to avocado.
And he wonders why I call him Jorge. It just fits.
But the thing with the Cool Ranch taco shell is that the way it's the seasoned is, it's almost like a seasoning. It's not like the nacho cheese one where it's just kind of like a stale chip nacho cheese or something like that.
Don't you downplay my tacos, my locos tacos.
But this one actually, the Cool Ranch seasoning, you know, on it is actually, it complements everything. It's, you know, it's good. Jump on that bandwagon.
Do you like Cool Ranch Doritos?
Sure.
Okay. Do you like tacos?
That was my concern.
Taco Bell?
Most taco shells that I've ever had at a taco place are like soggy.
I mean, it's not the most freshest, crispest.
Do you eat tacos from Taco Bell?
I've had them. I wouldn't say I eat them
regularly. So you don't eat like hard tacos from Taco Bell very often?
No, definitely not. Maybe 5 years ago was my last one. I don't know.
What?
I don't know. I'm just guessing.
You just broke hearts across America.
TB, if you're interested in sponsoring this podcast.
Exactly.
Don't send them to
Please
Jason.
Write to Jason.
Just send them to
do
us.
Do you like pirates.com?
Look, the only thing that Taco Bell's done that's been truly, truly in
revolutionary. Were you going to say innovative?
Thank you, yes. Is the BLT taco they had in like the mid-90s.
I have to say, you could probably go to Taco Bell and just order anything that from any generation of Taco Bell menu, and I'm sure they'll be able to order and make it for you.
Make it.
You think so?
Pretty damn close.
You ever heard the Jim Gaffigan, the stand-up comedian? He's got a bit about being a waiter. He's a super, super pale, blonde, white guy.
He's the Hot Pocket guy, right?
Yes.
Hot Pocket.
Yes, and he has a bit about being a waiter at a Mexican restaurant where you go in and someone's like, what is a taco? That's a tortilla with cheese, meat, and vegetables. Oh, what is a burrito? It's a tortilla with cheese, meat, and vegetables. What are nachos? It's a tortilla. What is a tostada? Look, it's all the same!
Seriously, how could you not appreciate the partnership between Taco Bell and Literally, when that got announced, I was ready to sell everything in the house.
Did you go
and
home?
Throw it all into the market Did that you? Day?
Well, we joked about it before, and it was just like, they really need to do this. It's like, well, funny fucking did it. Hoo-ah! Thank you, America. You're welcome.
Yes, both products are gold.
I'll tell you when the world's going to come to an end. So we've talked about on the show previously where it's good, the relationship is now going both ways, where Doritos has announced they're going to have a Taco Bell-flavored Dorito. The world is going to end when they have a Taco Bell-flavored Dorito-shelled taco at Taco Bell.
I really have to think about that. It's still processing.
You were trying to go the other way. You were trying to say a Dorito chip, Taco Bell-flavored.
That's what Doritos has announced. The world will end when that Dorito, Taco Bell flavored
Dorito
becomes a taco shell. That's when the world
will end. Oh, it can be so good.
Full circle.
Hey, dude, it's like Lion King. It's a circle of life. It's going to happen. No world's going to end. And once again, I'm back in the market for Taco Bell, dude.
If
they have a public IP, buy in.
You
heard that, Jack
Eckler.
Buy in. Buy in. I can't 5 years.
I don't know. I've had Taco Bell.
This is the time where I wish listeners could tune in the background. If we could point to an audience member and go, hey, when's the last time you had Taco Bell? Now, a given.
What if someone said 6 years?
We're in line. For listeners, just for heads up so people know and you guys back me up on this, we're in Los Angeles, which tends to be the healthiest fucking place on the goddamn planet. For somebody like me who comes from the East Coast where
have you ever been to San Francisco?
Okay, California.
Yeah, there you go.
Is the healthiest place on the planet, and everybody judges you for everything you eat. I can't stand it half the time. So,
someone explained to me Chick-fil-A. I don't get it.
As being amazing?
I don't get it.
Had it last night.
I don't get it. Here's the thing. Everybody who has ever lived on the East Coast...
Christians get it.
Everyone
it? I love, right now, everybody who's ever eaten a Chick-fil-A just started laughing.
Look, here's the deal. Everybody who's been on the East Coast and they open up a Chick-fil-A on the West Coast, those people go freaking ballistic. They're like,
of course
stoked.
They do.
They're stoked.
They're everywhere on the East Coast.
But I don't get it. Like, I've had the food. It doesn't.
You've had the chicken sandwich.
It's not bad by any stretch, but it's not like, oh my God, I can't wait for them to open another one.
So, okay.
Like, let me put it this way. I could definitely go the rest of my life and never, ever eat Chick-fil-A ever again and be 100% satisfied.
People feel that way about In-N-Out, though.
Yeah, agreed.
People feel that way about In-N-Out for the West Coast and stuff. Like, every time my buddy always comes back out here.
First thing
off the plane.
Always.
I'm like, what do you want to do? He goes, like, we're going In-N-Out.
And then you go there and you're like, okay.
Well, I mean, he grew up here and he's from here, but it's just.
So it's more that it's exciting that you can't have it.
Yes.
Well, you don't have it often, but I'll be honest. If I could have it once a week at least, but I used to eat it every day because it was across the street from Full Sail.
Chick-fil-A.
It's chicken.
I do like their cows. Those are
they
fun.
Are the nicest employees eat known to man chicken. Besides the Burger King by Sean.
Do you think
Sean.
That has anything to do with
the scare tactics of Christianity? Sure does.
Scare tactics? I was going to say moral backbone of the company.
Moral backbone.
Because they're supported by God. Hell, when God is your backer, all right.
You may be doing a few things right.
So some exciting news we can share now.
Yes.
Which is, I don't think we've talked about this on
the show.
I don't know where this is going,
but I'm excited.
But I like it.
I am very happy to share, if you haven't already heard out there, that a project that I've been working on for the last 2 years has been officially announced to be released in theaters on August 8th. We might have talked about that piece on the show before, which I'm very stoked about. What we haven't talked about, I don't think, is that we have announced the lead actor in the film, who's the voice of our main character, Mr. Dane Cook.
That's what I was waiting for. I didn't want to say anything because I just
we need
wanted
a soundboard
to be like,
to do
I know,
the cricket.
I wanted just that, or like, just like a baby crying or something. You know,
look. Here's the thing. You gotta say, I'm gonna. Here's
after seeing it, we got a taste.
We watched
Jason gave us a taste. Even though I guess it's online.
Online.
Anybody can go see it.
Taste from YouTube.
I actually thought I was special for a second, but
Disney's
yes, you can go to the thing called YouTube and watch this. his voice fits. I mean, it's easy to pick him out. Now, being people who know a backstory about them casting this character, could they maybe have gone other directions? Sure. And Jason, you know, I don't even know what he could talk about it, but. So to us in this room, who had heard a little bit more about this, it was kind of an odd casting. But on the same note, as soon as he started talking, and it's a short amount of lines, he kind of sounded ironically, to me, like Ryan Reynolds does in our trailer for Turbo. Like, they both have a very similar quality about their character, which, honestly, I find appealing. So, you know, hey, dude, that trailer's awesome, by the way. Or Thanks. The teaser's yeah. awesome.
If you like Top Gun,
if you like Top Gun, you're going to, yeah, you're going to be all over this.
I think I'm excited. The films turn out really, really good. We're in crunch time right now. For those of you not in the industry, crunch time is that period where you reach towards the end of a project where everybody's working long, hard hours to hit those final deadlines and get all the images and sound bits in on time.
Does that include you, Jason?
It does.
And he has time to come and record and have this wonderful
I'm working episode. Right now as we speak. I'm looking at things in stereo and getting reference. Yeah, but yeah, so anyways, we're very excited about that.
Yay.
Yay, dude. Yeah, it's good. We're excited for you.
Do you feel it's going to be done in time?
It will be done in time, yeah. All movies. Have you been on a movie that hasn't been done in time? Movies get made. There may be a lot of money spent in the last 2 months, but movies get made.
Do I know people who've been on movies that all of a sudden stop being made?
Yeah.
Well, yes, I do.
But there's also the point where
there's a baby crying again.
Yeah, there's also the point where to the point at where the movie just goes, that's good enough. Like, you know, oh, look at this
money
smoke
spent.
Trail, and it looks like, you know, just ass. You know, it's good enough because of the time constraints.
I think
this is going to be a polished piece.
I think that all projects, and I don't know that this is unique to animation either. I believe all projects get to a place where you begin compromising because the people who work on any project, let's take software development for an example. There are a million things you could do in any app, anything you develop that could potentially be better. But eventually you have to have a deadline. Like, there is no perfect artistic project. There is no perfect... I don't know why I'm going here, but like, let's take the Higgs boson particle at the CERN laboratories.
Why not?
I'm sure that everybody who's there would love to spend more and more time gathering more and more proof before an announcement was made. But at some point, you just got to come out and say it. You just got to come out and put your product out there, or your announcement, or whatever it may be. You know, anybody who puts hard work into something wants it to be the absolute best that it can be. And
like Nerdtastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Best damn podcast on the internet.
Look, the truth of the matter is that we we would like every episode to be a little bit more polished, but what's most important is that you get to hear it, polished or not.
I'm glad
we
that
might
it's not
argue.
Polished.
You know, on the same note, though, I might argue this show's obviously from episode 1 through 5 is a lot more polished than it was.
I really, by the way, want to go back to recording with one USB microphone. Into my laptop, just for funsies. But with seven
one
people.
Episode,
we've grown.
Flashback Tuesdays,
flashback Wednesdays, third Wednesday of every month.
Oh no, I was gonna say we still record Wednesdays, but we do a flashback Tuesdays.
Flashback on Tuesdays.
Really bad episodes.
I don't know. Thursdays we're busy because we'd be bowling. Me and Jack joined a.
Oh, that's an announcement.
A bowling league. Yeah,
I just got my shoes in.
You joined a bowling league?
We did.
Where do you play, Pickwick?
No, we're going to play at Jewel City.
Balls to the wall.
I know you're a bowler, right, Josh? You've done this before. I mean, like,
when I was a kid.
But you own your own ball, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We both do.
You do?
Oh, yeah. I was into it for a while.
I got my Simpsons one.
Really?
Yeah, really.
I am so the opposite. I took a bowling class in college, and I'm pretty sure I got a C+ in it.
get that for just showing up.
No, you bowl a first game, and then you bowl again when the semester ends as your final, and you're graded on how much you improve. I did not improve. I got worse.
I don't know.
Is that really how you did it?
Yeah. So I don't know why. I just didn't connect the dots that I thought I should bowl.
Ten pins need to go down.
No, I just thought on the first.
Jason, your lane's here.
I got that on the eighth frame on the last game.
Look, what everybody's thinking is that you have to bowl a terrible first game if that's what you're measured against.
Did they put the rails up?
The bumpers?
Yes.
I like bumper bowling.
So wait, you just did, you know, Terry try hard?
I gave it my all every time I went out there because that's how I was raised and that's who I am.
And I'm sure when you first started, you weren't horrible. And I'm sure as they try to teach you form, you got
worse.
Yeah, you start over.
And what's funny is, so I learned, I got into it inadvertently. I literally got into it from a bowling alley down the street in Orlando. They had a quarter beer night. And the group of guys who I hung out with were like, dude, it's quarter beer. Let's just go bowl. Being guys, And a lot of us who had played sports, inadvertently, you become very competitive. And when you do that, you all of a sudden start drinking the Kool-Aid. And the beer
or
drinking...
the beer in this
no,
case.
No, no. Ironically, the beer became less and less. And it was all about just score. And then all of a sudden, before I knew it, I was at a damn bowling ball shop. Not like a store that's all they sell, getting like the ball drilled. And I'm in a practice lane. And I spent 4 months trying to learn how to curve the ball. So, like, my games was average. I bowled straight, and I probably bowled, like, 175, something like that. The game, when I turned to – I wanted that pro form. You know when you end and your leg sweeps over and you look pretty? I'm like, I want to do that. My game went down to, like, 50s and 40s for months until I figured out how to do that. And then it came back up. And now it just looks damn sexy when I bowl. Am I great still? No. Do I go off and – hell no, I haven't been in forever. I told him the other day before our first game's tomorrow. And I said, dude, are we getting there early to bowl a few games? Because I haven't done this. As a matter of fact, and I bought new shoes. I have no idea how the hell these things are going to do.
What are they made out of? Are they Toms?
No, they're weird. So, like, my first ones, I didn't know you could do this. You literally can buy, if you're a right-handed bowler, you could buy shoes that are designed for right-handed bowling. And I didn't know that. You could buy left-handed. You could buy – I think the ones I had were, like, ambidextrous. You could just – for whatever. But then I wanted to one-up it once I saw right-handed bowling. What the hell? Okay, I'm in. Who knows?
And you can just have one where, you know, if you're a right-handed bowler, you slide on your left foot, like when you deliver. And your right foot usually hangs back behind you.
I might bust my ass. I have no idea what's about to happen. They look comfy, though. They look like orthopedic shoes for your grandparents. So,
but one of the big draws about this league, because it's called 8 for 8. It's just an eight-week league. $8 a week. You play two games. And at the end of the league, you get a ball. You get a free ball. So
really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's
well, I want to see how it's going to go. If it goes good, I actually would like to do the Nerdtastic crew and just see how we do. Because Sean likes bowling.
Some of us won't do very well. But
you get a free ball.
And we'll have fun doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd do a team. Is that what they are? Bowling teams with you guys?
Compared to a clan?
Gaggles?
A
what are they called?
Oh, we came up with a name, too.
So I'm not even part of that name, but I'm sure it's great.
It's so, called Split on My Chest.
I finally finished Split on My Chest.
Yes.
Is that even legal there?
I don't know, but it's going to be something like, you know, Holy Splits or, you know, Split This.
Wow.
This Splits.
So I finished watching House of Cards.
Oh, the Kevin Spacey?
Anybody seen it yet?
No, I haven't
seen it yet.
Is it good?
It's very good. It is very,
that's
very
what I've
good.
Heard. What's the concept of
acting
that show?
It's a political drama. I actually didn't know this, but it's based on or inspired by a BBC show called House of Cards. I don't want to give any spoilers away. We'll keep this a spoiler-free.
He's Kaiser Soze.
Cast.
Wow. Rosebud.
The only thing I'll tell you is that the basic gist of it is that national politics is an incredibly fragile, evolving but fragile state. So any one person with enough influence and guts, I guess, let's say, can go in and dramatically impact things. And so I think, you know, the basic gist of the story, without giving too much away, is that it's following this politician who has, for whatever reason, quite a bit of influence at different parts of the government and has a plan. And that's all I'll tell you about it. But it's very, very good. The acting is amazing. There's some really, really great actors and actresses in it. But I will say Kevin Spacey, man, he's a top-notch guy,
huh?
He's a good actor, for sure.
Very cool. Yeah. It's good.
So I recommend it. Recommend it.
It's good that what I liked about that, too, is that when it came out on Netflix, all the episodes come out at once. It's not like, you know, you have to wait a week and wait a week. Yeah.
It was on
the whole season.
In one day, Netflix released the whole thing. So they really are changing. I mean, they took – it even says the credits on – the opening credits or whatever, they say developed for television by is one of the credits. And so clearly they're treating it as though it's a television show, you know. So it's getting like whatever proper WGA credits and all that stuff. But, you know, they released it in one lump, never released on TV, but released from a streaming company, which I think is really, really interesting. And then the – you know, I hadn't heard anything, but Netflix announced interest in exploring 4K streaming, and they are interested in House of Cards being their flagship show, which means that
in 4K,
basically they've said that, you know, they haven't said anything specifically or announced anything, but they've led the press to believe that House of Cards will continue on in other seasons, and that it will potentially
did
be
they leave it
4K.
Open? Did they leave it open like that? I mean, at the end of the
definitely.
Season one, that you could keep going.
Definitely.
Well, that's what they're going to do too with the Arrested Development. It's all just going to come out, boom, one shot. You're not going to have to sit there and wait for each week.
And who will be sitting down and watching it in one lump sum?
Everybody.
Oh, everybody. That show's amazing.
I'm amazed about the technology behind something like that, because I agree. When Arrested Development comes out, there will be how many millions of people sitting down and all streaming this thing at the exact same time? Which means, what kind of a technology infrastructure do you need to be able to support that?
What kind of technology infrastructure do you need to stream 4K? Think about
that's
just
insane,
like,
dude.
You know, that's like having bandwidth of the frickin'
Speaking of
Grand
bandwidth,
Canyon.
Did you guys hear the, and not to stop you short,
did you hear
if
the
you
band?
Ago, the, so Comicology, which is an app you can get for your iPad, iTunes, iPhone. I don't know if it's an Android app or not, but it's a, it was the first sort of comic book distribution, digital distribution system that Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, everybody's all in one in this, and you could purchase comic books, 99 cents. There was a couple weeks ago, there was a...
99 cents?
They have on sale all the time for 99 cents. They vary, but they have sales almost daily for 99 cents comics. And they're in digital format where you can do all the nice...
Animating comics? Like, do they...
No, you can, though. You can choose to read them, though, by board, and it animates to that, but it's not the motion comics.
I see.
So, and the library is huge. So recently, over the last 2 weeks, there was a big announcement, and the big announcement was Marvel, for a period of, I believe it was just over a weekend, was going to, for free, let you download 655 of the first issues of Marvel comic books. And there were 655 of them you get for free. And they were all first issues of
like what?
Everybody
like Superman?
All the Hulks, all the Wolverines, all the Silver Surfers, all the X-Men, all the Civil War series, House of M. Any of the first issues of those series you could get for free. Huh. And any spin-off ones that did a first issue for free. So I read this. I read this really late, like on a Friday. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. Because I had the app thinking at one point maybe I'd be like Josh. Josh was a big proponent in general of just digital comics. And I'm like, God. And I had saw our friend Dan Camp, who listens. I had seen some on his iPad. And now that I had an iPad, I'm like, they're beautiful images. They're beautiful. And I don't have to store them. So I'm like, let me check this out. So I go on. I find 79 that I like out of the 655. I don't go through and just randomly select everything. The ones that catch me, I grab all the Hulks, I grab all the Wolverines, I grab all the Silver Surfer, and then I grabbed all the Civil War ones you could, and then strategically pick some other ones that I thought would be interesting that I want to read. So many people did this that the entire weekend was lost. I didn't download one. And I mean, I literally every second I had the iPad back in my hands.
What do you mean, sir?
Hitting download. So many
people connect.
Tried to get on to their server. You could. What was nice is at least you could go through, you could hit purchase. It would add it to your download queue. So at one point I had 79 comics set up in my queue. And I'm like, you know, all of them were set to waiting or pause. And I hit like one download. Nothing. Did you try this as well?
I had 76 of them.
Okay, so I'm going through
what
and
were
I'm
the
trying
other
to do
three that you couldn't find that Jack did.
He probably already had them. He actually has a lot of these in print already, so he probably didn't get them for that reason. So I'm going through it and all weekend, Jason. Literally any chance I had, literally I would pick the iPad up, look, and just randomly try. Even at like if I was up at 3:30, I'm like, now's going to be a good time.
In the afternoon,
I read yes, because I was awake at that point.
That's good.
So I'm trying to download these. Nothing comes through all weekend. I'm like, well, that was shit. And so they send out an email on Sunday night, I believe, or Monday morning saying, we apologize. If you know, here's your name on the email list. We'll get back to you whenever. Luckily, the purchase order stayed in my queue. So now that the servers are back on track, they're there. So when I click on them, I can hit download. And what's nice about they're yours. It's not a subscription service. You download them. They're on your iPad. They're yours. You can read them, whatever. So that's cool. So I have all mine. I've downloaded probably to the iPad. I only have the 16 gig one. I don't know, like 20 or so. What's crazy, though, as I read later, is that DC and Dark Horse in particular, I think, are the two I've heard, are suing Marvel and Comicsology, because what happened is that took down the entire server for the weekend, meaning nobody could download their comics either.
Sure.
And now they're claiming loss, and I found that really interesting.
Yeah,
because I hadn't really thought of it that way. So Marvel's little promotion crapped everybody's comic book sales out.
But that's you can do it on Marvel too, the Marvel app.
That's
not even just
sure. But Comicsology went down because
So they're not suing Marvel; they're suing Comicsology.
And I think Comicsology is coming back saying this was Marvel's promotion. The lawsuit needs to be at them. I guess what's funny too is somebody told me as well who one of the guys I work with has the new Marvel like Unlimited app, and this is cool. I don't think we've talked about this on the show. It's a subscription based service, and you pay I think it's $10 a month or a $75 a year or something like that, or maybe less, and you get access when you're on Wi-Fi to every single Marvel comic they have scanned in. Which right now I think is over 13,000, and they're still scanning daily backlogs. And at any given time, you can download 6 to your iPad to read offline. And then it's like Netflix. You know, you want new ones, you take that back. So you don't own them, but you have access to everything. Hmm. And then they catalog it in like series and story arcs and everything else. They're all set up for you. And he's doing it, and he likes that a lot.
Cool.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Do you have that? Do you pay for that?
Marvel Unlimited?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, remember when I was on Gap and I just kept reading all those comics? That was basically because I was on Marvel Unlimited.
For free.
For free.
So for everybody other than Josh,
A little bug out there in Marvel Land that I have slid through the cracks, and I basically get it for free.
Okay. I like this.
Other people have to pay. Now, it's a little buggy from what I've heard, the iPad app.
Yeah. It's slow. It doesn't go into full screen. When you go to the Marvel app or Comicsology or whatever, you know, you can do panel, you know, panel for panel and stuff like that. And then it goes to, it will do that on this one, but it does it small and you can't really like zoom in very well at all. It's kind of a
here, click on one of those. The ones I have downloaded
and it's okay. The Marvel Unlimited app, it's kind of a little bit of a buggy. It's just not as clear. It's not as cool.
Well, it hasn't been out very long.
Yeah.
Like the actual app.
See, Jason, you have it in page form. So you can actually switch that to...
I think if you hit the question mark down low, it'll let you do sort of the panel mode where you can then double click and it'll go from panel to panel. But it's... in general, I like the Comicsology app, and that's something I want to talk about. I like the app. I think what's nice is I can get DC Comics and Marvel Comics all in one area. I don't have to worry about like getting the – and I have it. I can get the DC app, and you can get the Marvel app and get Dark Horse. This place literally has them all, and they have the independent ones too, so there's some really random ones out there that you can get that are pretty good. But
and there's a few. There's a thing called Infinite Comics, which was part of Marvel, where it actually – started revealing parts that you were supposed to read at a time. And that was actually drawn and scanned in to where, like, there was a background. And then you'd click on it, and then a character would pop up. So it's, like, almost like a motion comic. But
like, look how
still.
Nice that is compared to potentially super what you would get. Yeah, super clear. High res. I guess they scan them HD and put them on there. So, yeah, it's nice. If you're going to read stuff, it's really nice.
Hey, by the way, 28 minutes in, almost 29. We should probably mention that there are 4 members of our podcast not here, in case you haven't figured that out. Okay, moving on.
We've just been hogging
the
mics.
Do we need them? Nope.
We're much funnier without them.
This is like the good old days when
the show was good. This was it.
Hey, so
another announcement. Unless you had something, I was going to say along the lines of what you were saying with planes. Me and Josh LeBrot's little labor of love.
Yay!
Release trailer number 2. Today,
nailed it.
For Turbo, the AKA International trailer, which is on iTunes today, and I think tomorrow it can go everywhere else. Yeah. Is that what it is, Josh?
It's a one-day exclusivity with Apple iTunes. Or
but
how Apple does that trailers. Work? Does DreamWorks pay for that? Does Apple pay for that?
I would say Apple does because there's...
Why would they pay for an exclusive trailer?
Traffic?
Does it? I guess my question is: does a trailer drive to? Like,
yeah.
Yahoo Movies is the same thing, right? They'll have an exclusive.
Yeah.
For a couple
I
days,
think it drives traffic.
It does.
Absolutely,
okay.
Yeah. Because you put out the link.
I'm not a big.
And then it goes. You can only go there, and that was a problem at Dream. So they sent out to DreamWorks employees who are on Linux boxes, and for anybody who uses Linux, you can't use QuickTime. So all of us were like, yeah. Oh.
Thanks.
And they were being pulled down from YouTube as fast as they went up. People were like ripping these, putting them up on YouTube, yes. And they. They were getting pulled down. I posted, I think, a link to CG Meetup, which is a site I posted some of the other stuff, visual effects-wise, on our Facebook page. But that one worked for me today. That was how I was able to watch it.
It depends on how early you got to it.
This was later.
This was about 2-3 minutes ago.
But Jason pulled it up on iTunes. Jason, you're the outsider. Me and Josh have seen it, so, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, it definitely looks fun. You know, I mean, I think.
Quit blowing smoke up our asses. Tell us how you really feel.
Well, the only thing I'll say is, you know, there are rumors out there that DreamWorks is interested in partnering with other, like, not just licensing agreements, but actually having, like, legit toys and consumer products built around this movie. And I'm not 100% convinced. Like, what I've seen looks like a fun movie. I don't know that I've seen stuff that, to me, says that'll be a great toy. You know,
they've partnered with some pretty big names, and you know, like with what is it, Hot Wheels?
Yeah,
and no, it's Mattel. I mean, Mattel's their Mattel. Big, which is a Disney toy company as well. Man, Mattel handles the Princess line and a bunch of the other ones too. Actually,
some of the toys that are the Hot Wheels related and stuff like that will be able and fit and work like on a Hot Wheels track too.
Right, which is cool. I guess, to me, I think there are certain things that just scream like, "Man, that's going to sell a million toys," and I don't know if a snail will.
But I could have argued back in the day, and I think we all could have. I no idea Cars would have been a merchandise machine like it's become for Disney. I mean, outside of the it's Cars, okay, I get kids, but nothing like it's become.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to picture a world without Cars merchandise in it, isn't it? I mean, it's like everywhere.
For a movie that's not
Planes is going to kill it. I think it's going to fucking kill it.
Well, it taps them into a market they weren't in. So, I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, they can.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
Kids love
toy planes. I could definitely be really wrong. You know, I mean, I think this goes into the creativity of other job areas. Like the things that consumer products people think about and create, and the people who design toys, they think of amazing stuff. And it very well could be that, you know, 6 months from now, I'm looking back at the movie. And going, of course, it makes sense that there are all these toys because I see it now. But at the moment, it doesn't immediately jump out to me as, oh, there'll be amazing toys and a lot of high volume of consumables purchased because of this thing. But I could be very, very wrong. But from an actual movie standpoint, it looks super fun. I got to admit, I hadn't seen anything about the little backup clan in the trailer, and that looks super fun. Looks like there's, if I get some voices right, looks like Snoop Lion is in it, and
yes.
Little Samuel, and it looks like fun. That little backup crew or whatever it is, it looks pretty funny. Looks like there's some comic relief, and Ryan Reynolds' voice is great. That works really well.
Yeah, well.
Seems like that's going to work pretty well. So, you know, I mean, definitely am interested in seeing the movie. I'll tell you this, and I apologize, Jack. Hope this isn't offensive. I think that trailer is more entertaining than Guardians' trailer was.
I think it's more fit. Well, it's a catch-22, right? I think it's more indicative of what Dream. I think this movie is of what DreamWorks does well, and I think of what Jeffrey knows how to work with well. I think this is Fox's first take. Understand the trailers are not done by us.
Why don't you speak to that a little bit?
I think people need to understand. We did talk about this at one point. And I just want to bring it up again because it still fascinates. It's fascinating to me is that as a studio. You would think that we would be the ones cutting our own trailers with our own footage by our own editor, so we have control over this. We actually do not. So the companies that we go with for distribution, I mean, Disney has Disney as their own distributor, and that's what they've chose to do.
Buena Vista, yeah.
Yes, that they own. We Jeffrey has never seen that as a good business model for us. The money we would make in return just doesn't outweigh how much we save by letting somebody else just do all the legwork. And this time around, well, unfortunately, when Paramount did that, Guardians was their last show, And we knew we were going to go with another company, so they had multiple bidders, including Paramount, trying to keep our work up for grabs to get this. And Paramount's the one who handled the trailer. Unfortunately, we did not go with Paramount, and this was all still happening while Guardians was happening. And my opinion still is that Paramount just at that point just said, "Well, that was their middle finger to us," in my opinion.
Meaning they gave you a trailer to produce that was less than...
Yeah, well, everything they gave us. The marketing was horrible. Like, there's been better marketing on the DVDs now that we're owned by Fox than there ever was for the Guardians release in theaters.
Right.
I'm getting hit up all the time on how amazing... Down to Adam's girlfriend, Angie, is dying to get it for Easter. And she wants the one that comes with the two little eggs you can wind up and walk around. And I've been hearing that from everybody. Like, dude, the DVD Blu-ray is awesome. Blu-ray is awesome. And it's doing well. That's actually one of the better-selling DVDs that we've had on market. Hmm. So I'm excited. It could be a cult classic is actually what I'm hoping, sort of like what Nightmare Before Christmas was. I hope it comes holiday season. It's, like, something you want to watch. Come now, this time of year, Fox won the bidding. Fox has TV behind it. So they can pump as many, you know, their first one's Croods for us, which if you have, you're living under a rock if you haven't seen Croods Something Somewhere. Jason, you could tell already that we didn't get that kind of publicity for Guardians.
Right.
And they're also doing the trailer. But they have control over that. I think all Jeffrey has is sort of like a yay or nay at the end of it, but it is still them cutting it.
Sure.
So, yeah, I just think Paramount in general, I think, just didn't give a shit. Two, I think maybe there was a bit of they didn't know how to cut it. I think Jeffrey, there was this level of, we were talking about this at work the other day, down to even the toast. For people who don't know at DreamWorks, typically a week before the movie comes out or during that week, they do a sort of a celebrity, you know, a toast, a champagne toast at work to sort of say, hey, you know, thanks everybody who worked on this. Great job. Personally, I think it saves face in case the movie tanks. A lot of studios usually wait till after you've done good to do the toast. Just sort of make sure everybody gets acknowledged and we're happy. And it, in case it doesn't do well, like unfortunately mine did in the theater, to not have a toast after. So they do it before. But his level of enthusiasm and how he even talked about it left me and Sean sort of looking at each other like he knows something we don't know. And we knew it from the get-go. Every time he talked about the movie, we knew something was up.
You know, there's a secret there.
Well, I'm sure there's lots of secrets that went into that. It's sad to see that.
If there is a DreamWorks toast, champagne toast, the week before the movie comes out, the word has gotten to the executive staff that it will not be a stellar weekend for that project.
It's always before, though.
No. If, however, there is a toast the following Monday after the weekend, then the previous week they had gotten word that it's going to do very, very well.
They haven't done that, though, since Kung Fu Panda 1, from my understanding.
Right. That's my point. I don't think DreamWorks has gotten indication that their movies are going to be knock out of the park, even Shrek 4.
But, well, dude, I mean, How to Train Your Dragon was 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, that's the highest we've had.
That's critical. That's different.
No, I get that. But I mean, as far as they know ahead of time, though, when that, which is funny, that's another conversation we'd have. I think Rotten Tomatoes exists only for Los Angeles area. So everybody else in there was like everybody at work. So it was like we're 85%, and it's starting to hit me now. Going, that is for like 1% of the 1% who go to Rotten Tomatoes to go to their movie viewing.
Right.
Go to anywhere else in Mid-America and go, why would you go see that? I don't know. Bobby told me it was pretty good, and I'm going to go see what Bobby told me. Bobby always picks good movies.
It's like, looks funny.
Damn good trailer on that one. You know what I'm saying? That's the majority.
Middle America, you're welcome to join this podcast anytime.
Yeah, people, you come to L.A., it's instantly, well, what's your Rotten Tomatoes score? And that's an industry thing, too. I think it's an industry. It's like,
it's
horrible.
It's in DirecTV. When you look at DirecTV and you look at any movie from like any movie that's playing, TBS, and then even on premium channels and stuff like that, when you go to the info button, it has stars that are rated, and it goes how many stars, and then it gives a percentage that is pulling from like Rotten Tomatoes.
Which is an aggregation site of people reviewing movies, and it basically just pulls from each of these reviewer sites, and then it does a lump score based on there. For anybody who hasn't gone to this site,
much like Metacritic for yes. games,
we've joked many of times with friends of mine of what's the lowest scoring movie you've worked on, I think we've done it here, haven't we?
I don't know.
Wow, that's
Jason,
I don't actually know.
I've been with people who've gotten here's the fact too. The movie had to have at least gotten a review. There are movies, believe it or not, that have never even been reviewed on Rotten Tomatoes. So that let's throw those out. And I have had friends that we threw those out. But if you have gotten a review from a critic, you can be as low as 0% still. And I know a couple friends who've worked Arachnophobia or something like that, I think was like a zero.
Here's my problem with Rotten Tomatoes is it's not a one-to-one thing. So it's not like a percentage. The idea is that it's a percentage of positive feedback. So if there are 100 critics and 50 of them give it a favorable nod, you know, a thumbs up, then that would get a 50%. The problem with that is that every critic has their own whatever method. 4 stars, 5 stars, 2 thumbs up, 1 thumbs up, thumb up your butt. I don't know. But the problem is that the Rotten Tomatoes people are interpreting. There's human interpretation there.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
That's my problem with Rotten Tomatoes is I could maybe write one paragraph that was positive. Like, say I'm a critic, and I'm writing my article to say I want to go over first what was positive about it, then what was negative about it, and then I want to sum up my thoughts about the film. That's how I want to structure my article. So say my actual impressions are here's what's positive, here's what's negative. Overall impressions is that it was positive, okay? If I'm not like super crystal clear in my language, the Rotten Tomatoes staff could interpret it as positive, and then the last thing I said was negative, so therefore I must think it was negative, even if I had a summary section, if it wasn't super clear. So they could actually interpret that article slightly incorrect, or if someone says 3 stars and they're like right on the border, is that bad or is that good? 5 stars, it's not like, is it 2.5 and that's a perfect 50? Like, there's so much interpretation there that a 98% on How to Train Your Dragon, right? Do you really think there were people out there or whatever 2% that really said it was a negative movie? Or do you think there's a chance that there were people out there who had some negative things they didn't like about the film but had positive, impressions of it overall?
From what I thought they did is they thought they had to actually give it a percentage too.
I don't believe so.
I don't think so.
I don't believe so.
No, they have their own thing. But when you actually, it gets posted or something like that, or you get, whether you think it's fresh or unfresh, because it's not about 60% or 30%. It's whether you liked it or you didn't.
Right. But the like it or didn't is not always black or white. It's not always, yes, this movie's great. No, this movie's not.
But I think
what happens if this movie was, it was okay. If someone said, this movie is, here's a popular critic thing. This movie is great for families with kids. That doesn't tell you if the movie's good or if the movie's bad. That just tells you there's a certain audience that would think this movie's good.
If you're reading, that's the only part of the review. Nobody's going to review or give you a review of one sentence like that.
No, true. But what if a critic, I guess the point is that critics don't actually.
I'm here now. So
I'm here now.
I am on the tomatoes that are rotten.
Okay.
Josh actually might be right. So there's two things. There's another thing I want to bring up too. So you have, when you go to the site, you actually have your tomato meter, which is from people who are, they deem credible reviewers, Variety, Time, bloggers who are very popular. Then what I tend to look at as well is next to that is an audience review. And those are people who just come to the site and actually want to review it themselves or whatever. That sometimes is a more accurate depiction of how the movie, I always love action movies. Action movies get slammed by viewers. I'll go off to the right, 98%, audience love. I'm like, that's what I'm talking about.
They get slammed
about.
By critics, you mean.
They get slammed by critics. So in this case, what is interesting, I didn't know this till Josh brought up that they had to do a percentage, is they have an average rate. So right now I'm looking at The Croods, which is our next DreamWorks film that's coming out. The tomato meter is 81%, which is awesome. Underneath that, though, they do an average rating, and it's 6.8 out of 10. So that would lead me to believe that they actually have to put a percentage.
Who does?
I'm guessing them. Reviews counted. And I look at that too. So right now it's 31 reviews.
These are the reviewers or these are the critics?
And they tell you the percentage. So right now, fresh is what you want to be the best. And that's, they have 25 fresh. So maybe it is just a fresh and the other one is rotten. So we have 25 fresh, 6 people who think it's rotten. Now maybe I should read a rotten just so I get an idea.
But here's my point. Say the movie critic for the Wall Street Journal, let's say. I don't even know if they have one. But let's say they do. Do you really think he... or this person, he or she, is going to come to the Rotten Tomatoes site and give it a special rating specifically for that site? Absolutely
it's
not.
It's not a it's not that. I mean, say you sit there and you go 1 through 10. It's a 6. 60%.
Right.
Okay. So per the tomato meter of being like 65%, anything above that is fresh. 65 below is rotten.
Sure.
So if you sit there and you go, okay, 66%, it's a fresh thing. But you sit there and it's just like per Rotten Tomatoes, that is fresh. That is a good, it's a positive thing. And you can sit there and go, it's not for kids, it's for these people. But you'll see whether or not that critic has, you know, a tomato or a leaf.
He's refused.
But a critic, that tomato or the little splat, a critic doesn't put that down. Rotten Tomatoes puts that down by
based
interpreting.
Based off of their score. Because they will score it 1 through 10.
Who does?
The critic.
You think every critic comes to the site and rates it?
Not comes to the site. It's part of their review.
But my point is that not all critics go 1 through 10 stars.
No, but I'm saying they like from what I've understood is they give a 1 through 10. Like they have their own thumbs up or thumbs down sort of thing. Okay, say like Roger Ebert.
Sure.
And you know. But they also give a score for other people too.
Maybe. We'll there. Have to research this because yeah, I don't 100% know. I don't know. I think maybe they give a thumbs up, thumbs down. But what I find interesting are there's two of the Rottens that are on the main page, and which I'm
for
with Jason
Croods.
For Croods, and I always find Rottens interesting on any movie because of what Jason's saying. You can't some of them you can't tell because what they do on Rotten Tomatoes is give you a quote that best sums up maybe how they feel about the movie, and it's usually a quote from the full article. So in this case, you have one guy from Slant Magazine, Chris Cabin. The film takes more than a few pages from the James Cameron playbook. In my opinion, now that's the end quote. And? Cameron's made billions of dollars, if you're going to follow anybody. Sure enough. So maybe I read that and me, read that as, okay, I don't see it as a negative, but I get maybe how some people see it, but I don't see it as that. That was a rotten. That was his quote. The other rotten, now this is super funny. Was this secretly produced by the Institute for Creation Research? Who but Western creationalists would give or would believe that humanity was created intact with 1950s value? Are you fucking kidding me? That this was somebody who was allowed on the front page of Rotten Tomatoes. This, my folks, is why people in the Midwest and the rest of the world just enjoy the fucking movies and don't read this shit.
Well, I think what's interesting is, you know, critics isn't. The misconception is, you're right, Jack, that most of America is looking to someone else to judge their opinion on films by. I think most people judge a film by a trailer.
Absolutely. Or friends. That's how it's always been.
Word of mouth.
Yep.
But that's why I think the importance of a good trailer is crucial for a film. And why there's such an interesting political and bureaucratic system surrounding the placement of trailers and the order of trailers and who gets to go in front of which trailers get released in front of which films. And, you know, that's a very selective thing, which, you go see The Croods at an AMC, do you know what you're going to see for the AMC first look?
Planes.
Yay.
Tie-in.
Tie-in. Tie-in.
Plug for Nerdtastic.
Flying.
That's right. We've dug deep into the old Nerdtastic pockets of wealth that we don't get from anything.
And if you look very closely, you might see a Nerdtastic sticker on one of the planes flying around.
No, oh, that won't. Would have been awesome.
I know.
Jason.
No, you won't. But I do have some fun, interesting stories we can share after the film comes out. So
spoilers.
Not spoilers.
Behind the scenes.
I wanted to cover something that I wanted to touch on last week, shifting gears a little bit here, which is about a year ago, I think, I brought up on the show something that I had discovered, which I believe I was very late to the game, which was Google Reader, which is an RSS news aggregator. Basically, the websites I look at a lot during the day are in blog format, where there is an article that is released, and it's a sequential list, you know, endless list of articles, basically. And, you know, there's a bunch of different people. So rather than like, hey, on Sunday we're going to put out a magazine or a thing with a whole bunch of articles, it's there may be one every hour or one every 15 minutes or whatever. So a lot of, you know, Engadget, Gizmodo, Kotaku, Joystick, a lot of the blogs that, you know, probably a lot of us follow, they have this thing called an RSS feed, which is basically for lack of a better word, it's a broadcast that says, hey, we're going to notify anyone who subscribes to us that there is a new piece of content. YouTube has a concept of this. So you can subscribe to a channel, and it will notify you when there is a new, you know, video by that channel.
Nerdtastic in 3D on YouTube.
Right. You know, I actually don't know. I'm not subscribed to anything on YouTube. YouTube is not a place I go and spend a lot of time. It's more of a place where someone sends a link and
so
I just happen to watch
it. With Google Reader, how does it notify you?
So Google Reader, you open it up. It's a simple little interface, and you have a box where you can type in a URL. So in this case, joystick.com. And then you hit subscribe. And what it does is it knows, you know, it's got a huge, huge compiled database of all these sites that have RSS feeds. And it goes and it knows to find the RSS feed. So it knows, okay, if I type in joystick, it knows what the RSS feed associated with that website is. And it then creates an entry in this little column on the left that says, okay, here's joystick. And it's just a little tiny entry. It almost looks like a email mailbox. And then it has a little number next to it of all of the unread articles.
But not very visual, per se.
No, it's very text-based. Okay. And then if you click on... So let's say I have 5 or 6 different websites that I have up. In the left-hand side, I would see basically like imagine like a chat group or an email group chain or something like Gmail does. And so I'd say, here are joystick, and I have a little number. Joystick says I have 5 unread articles. And Engadget says there have been 6 things that I haven't read. And then it keeps track of what you've looked at. So then you can say, okay, I want to see everything that this site has to offer, or I only want to display articles I haven't seen yet. And so then I click on Engadget, and then what comes up in the main viewer page, just like an email, is a bigger list of all of the different articles I haven't seen yet. So literally, what I used to have, you know, 20 tabs up in a browser, and I'd just cycle through them from left to right throughout the day. I'd just be, all right, let's see what this one has. Okay, I haven't read that. Okay, let's see what this one has. Now I literally have one web page up, which is Google Reader, and it just automatically gets updated anytime there's a new article posted. So Joystick puts up a new post. RSS feed sends a signal to my Google Reader. And it basically then grabs that article and puts it in my feed to be able to read. Now, the reason we're bringing all this all up is I have been in love with this concept of RSS, subscribing to RSS feeds. And I love it. It's been awesome. It's changed the way my internet behavior, really streamlined things. Google announced last week that they are discontinuing Google Reader. Now, there's two things here. One is the main style of news websites these days is this blog article-based thing. That's not going away. So you'd think a one-to-one would be that something that could aggregate this stuff would be very, very positive. Now, we are going to find, I know there's some other guys on the show that use Google Reader. We're going to find a replacement. There's a lot, the internet's in a bit of an uproar about this. There's a ton of blogs and news surrounding how angry people are that Google Reader is going away. There are other alternatives, of course, that can do a similar type of thing. We'll find a good one. We'll give you the lowdown on it. But what's interesting is the thought process behind why Google is killing off Google Reader is that they have viewed that there is a war between RSS and social media. Meaning most people no longer get their news by going to a website or interacting with some sort of website. That's what RSS is. It's a way of basically aggregating web data. Mm-hmm. People don't do that anymore. People get their news from Twitter.
From people who post stuff that they've read.
Partially, but even more importantly than that, let's give a one-to-one. If Joystick has is a blog and has an RSS feed, and I subscribe to that so I get the update, there are 4 times the amount of people that are just subscribed to the Joystick Twitter feed where the article is also posted.
Sure. There's still limitations. I mean, at the end of the day, all they can really do is, I guess maybe what your RSS feed does, though, on your Google Reader, though, you can pull up the whole page right there, it is. Twitter doesn't do that. Right. Twitter, you're limited to a 56, what is it, 56 characters, 150 characters?
But I bet you it's kind of...
Well, they link you.
Trying to make people use Google Plus more. Because it's a social media site, so it's going to be posted,
And so if anyone out there has any experience with this, please let me know. But I logged into Google Plus recently to try and see, okay, are they just incorporating their feed stuff into this? Because that's fine. I'll log into Google Plus.
Alan Smithy. Mind.
But not the case.
I don't know.
Not the case. Google Plus has no offerings of any kind in this news aggregation thing. So I don't know if it's all social or what the deal is, but I'm at the moment at a bit of a loss for what's going to replace it. They've announced they're supporting it through July. So come July, I can't remember, 9th or 19th or something like that, they're going to pull the plug. So plenty of time. But if you hit up any of the any popular tech website, Gizmodo and Gadget, they have lots of articles recently about how to, you know, here are some good possible replacements.
The one I saw and we talked about before the show, a friend of mine at work uses, is called Pulse.
Yep.
What I liked, which is a little different, and it actually reminds me of what I like about Evernote, is it's more of a visual RSS reader. You get a taste of what's on the page before you click on it instead of it just being a text-based system. And it looked pretty simple. The iPad app looked really nice that I saw. The actual web page looked really nice. I'm going to give that a try.
Yeah.
Because I haven't tried that yet. I'm still old school. I still go to the pages I go to.
This will change your life. I kid you not. As lazy as it sounds, to have everything updated in one place is amazing.
And we, you know, as a show, amazing. Though, I mean, we all try to, in general, and I'm sure there's things we bring up on this show, especially by the time it gets to you guys, that you've heard about or you've been hearing about, whatever else. I hope on occasion we bring something that you're like, holy shit, I didn't know about that, whatever else. Because we are those guys who spend our extra free time scouring the net for just bullshit that we find, you know, interesting.
Entertaining and or nerdy.
Yeah, well, I was starting to say that, I'm like, God, I'm starting to sound like the intro all of a sudden.
But not if you're Adam doing the intro.
I hope, though, and I said this at one point, we were talking pre-show about things that we could do to you know, keep enhancing the show and make it that much better, and I hope we can start doing a little more
twitchiness,
convention stuff.
Add some twitchiness to our show.
Some convention stuff and start Twitch. Going to that stuff.
Which, by the way, Nerdtastic in 3D, coming to you live from
E3
and Comic-Con this year.
Okay, look, speaking of that, I want to give a shout-out first to my friends at PAX. PAX East, my buddy Rajiv Katori is out there with Cooler Master, flocking his keyboards.
Flocking.
That's not even the right word. He is.
Peddling.
Peddling his wares.
I like it.
over there right now, he's having a blast. Saw some pictures of him singing at a karaoke bar late night in Boston. So I guess everybody's having fun, but us.
Caroline.
That's not what he was singing, but okay.
See, the thing I like about him is if we're singing, he won't skip a beat. He'll join me. He'll join me.
Well, it's got to be something good. Anyways, E3. I've gone every year since I've lived. You want to hear this then. Every year since I've lived out here.
Okay.
Because the first job I got when I was in video games.
Sure.
Matter of fact, I had to work it a day even back then. So every year since then, I've been fortunate enough to work in this industry, been able to have the very easy credentials if you work in the industry to go there, you just need W-2, paycheck, ID, whatever the hell it was, insurance card. So I slacked a little bit. I signed up very early. Jason was on the ball instantly. But this was a year, for whatever reason, they needed me to renew my credentials. They sent me the email from the alumni list for E3. I sat on the emails, and they were sending them at least once a month, once every 3 weeks. And if, Josh, you haven't done it yet, you're probably seeing them too. Confirm your credentials, you need to send the stuff in. Now, the due date for this is April 9th, I believe.
Yeah.
So I finally said, I'm on gap at work. I get a month in between shows. I'm going to go ahead and do this because, God forbid, this shit doesn't work. Jason's going to have my balls. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. I'm not worried about anybody else other than my partner in crime at E3, which I had a blast with last year. I got to get this done. So I just am at work. I scan in my DreamWorks ID, has my photo, has a DreamWorks logo, looks like an ID, and I scan in the only paycheck I had, which was probably a month old. The problem with their confirmation system is it takes 2 weeks. At the end of exactly 2 weeks, I get an email. Sorry, Mr. Geckler, this doesn't suffice. You might want to try again. And I'm just staring at the screen going, okay.
I wrote
a very strongly worded email back saying, well, one, they said, there's things. So my name, my full, so everybody can clown me later, my full legal name is Richard Jackson Geckler. So for things on my W-2 and my checks, that's how they come. Mm. At work, on my ID and what people know me as, Jack, and every year I've been at E3, it has said Jack Geckler for whatever company. So I wrote back, said, I hope this is not an issue considering my middle name, and this is in quotes what I go by. So I have now submitted again with a recent, as of the day I sent it, paycheck. Now this is where it gets funny. And I submitted my W-2. The irony of the W-2s we received from DreamWorks this year, not one place does it say DreamWorks on the W-2. It, however, does say not one.
Really?
Really.
I scanned my name. Read it.
The only thing it does say is the two movies during the year that I worked on that I got paid for, which was Turbo and Rise of the Guardians. So I quoted to them and I said, please make sure if this is a problem to look in the lower right-hand corner where it lists the two feature films I worked on, because for whatever reason, the W-2, after I spent an hour blacking out everything that has salary associated, that's in. So, Jason, I'm giving you a heads up. I have now tried twice.
Okay.
I should know in a week if we're go. If not, I don't know the next step.
Now,
because my insurance isn't with them.
Now, the pain that you've gone through is only half.
Oh, don't even compare it to Comic-Con.
Comic-Con was miserable. Dude. I spent 4 hours of my time just applying the first time. And then that was basically just to apply so that you could apply. So I applied. Okay, I get accepted to be able to apply. And then there was some day where there's a website.
You got your number.
Why did it take you 4 hours? Did you read every, like, fine print of the...
No, he thought they were taking
advantage. Did you decide to read the user agreement for iTunes, too? Is that what...
I heard they kidnapped you and you become
human centipede.
I've never been to Comic-Con, but I will say it was
this year's your year. We're going.
Convoluted, horrible application process for an industry professional I have ever experienced.
In all fairness, it's gotten out of hand. I mean, Josh could attest to everybody who's gone in our group of friends. Another thing, I've gone since I've lived out here. Another convention has screwed me this year as well, Comic-Con. It's gotten so, for people listening who've never been, it's gotten so popular that the city of San Diego sells out of rooms. The entire
hotel
city.
Hotel rooms.
Hotel rooms. Yeah. The entire city. So Comic-Con has done something where they've partnered with, and San Diego, mind you, has a shitload of hotels.
They've partnered with Taco Bell, and they now have a bio
yes,
flavored.
It's amazing.
Taco Bell.
That Jason will never try. Where they partner and they lock all these rooms up. Like, you can't even go ahead of time to try to get a room during that weekend on close to the convention, actually, and anywhere downtown San Diego. So they do this thing where they open up a time where they unlock rooms. And you put, you know, the time was a couple, it was like a month ago, and it was on a Tuesday morning. I wasn't home. I said, you know, hey, log in. I logged in at 9 a.m. when it went live, and it said, list your first six. The first two I picked were the most expensive, because I take that as most people go to Comic-Con. Don't have a lot of money. They barely got there. The ticket to get in to start with is very expensive. And I basically coughed it up. You know what? I want to make sure I get a good room and a decent hotel room. I'm going to go for the two expensive ones first.
Okay.
Those will be given. If I have to spend it, cool. I at least got a room because they're really close. And then the ones underneath it were ones Josh knows I've stayed at. I would put the U.S. Grant again, which is expensive. The W Hotel, which is expensive. And those weren't even the two highest. So now I'm six deep of just what I think are even expensive hotel rooms. Get an email later that afternoon. Sorry, Mr. Geckler, no rooms available. Are you fucking shitting me? Please sign back in 2 weeks when we open it up again. That when they open it up again, it was pretty much like there's hotel rooms in Los Angeles that you're more than welcome to buy and drive down. So this, I have no idea where we're staying. Like I don't know. I don't even know how I'm gonna get this to work.
I am going for a day, and I will be coming back. I'm not staying.
And if I don't get a room, that's what's going to be the case.
I'm going to take the surf liner down. No, I'm just kidding.
He's just pushing. This kid likes to push every button you have about any convention. The convention starts cool. Jason gets a hold of it. He sucks the life out of it.
That's how I roll. I'm a life sucker out of conventions. Hey, no, so seriously, the application process for Comic-Con was, and I have one word to describe it, chaos. And I bet
they want you to pay. They want you to pay.
No, I bet the reason they are doing that is they're foreshadowing the actual event, that it is chaos.
Hold on.
Are there pirate related things here?
Yes. There's always people dressed as pirates.
What are you
saying? Yeah. Are you going to dress? Are you going to dress as a pirate?
I will.
Tell me you dress as a pirate, dude.
I will. I'm going to cosplay as a Plaid office worker.
It's an everyday event. Go to the Nerdtastic page. You can see as much as you want.
We'll cosplay. We'll discuss. We'll cosplay as nerds. with capes.
Now, if you go the first night like we did last year and Josh goes every – if you go on the preview night or if you go like we did for the last hour, it's insane how dead it is.
Last hour preview night, you can get through
– where they're yelling at us to leave.
So much. It's awesome.
The normal day – here's the thing. It's controlled chaos. It's just a lot of people in general, you know. And but if you're within our group, like we told you and Sean are the same way. You don't like crowds.
We're gonna have a buddy system, and I'm going to bring one of those little kid leashes.
And we talked
and I'm
about
attach it to my chest and give you the
teddy bear.
And give you the
I'm
handle.
Gonna give you the exactly the teddy. Jason,
don't lose me.
I'm more worried about like how Sean was too. You're so scared to get in there, and then it's insane eye candy, dude. You can't if you look right. There's always going to be something right you want to go look at. And you're like, well, I'll look left. Fuck, now
look,
I want to look at that.
It may be eye candy, but it's nose pollution.
Are you worried about just the smell of people?
Are you? Tell,
have you? I guess because we're always moving. Like, I don't run into that too often.
Yeah, no. I mean, there's some times when it's a little ripe. But I think it's honestly when I go. So during preview night, because a lot of times for the past maybe – 2 or 3 years, I've just gone Wednesday and Thursday.
He doesn't go with his friends. Let's go ahead and cut to the chase.
But this
here.
Year, he will be.
He better if yeah. you go.
So
he's already hated it.
Well, just because like it's not as crowded, it's easier to get through, and yeah, the weekend is just a madhouse. So we would go down Wednesday, just do a couple hours on Wednesday, because if you've gone, the thing about most conventions like Comic-Con, E3, and stuff like that, a lot of it is recycled. Each year it's recycled. You know where the things are. And we've talked about this too, where with the way digital media is and everything like that, a lot of information is online. I mean, you go to these things for, you know, hands-on experience of things. You're not going there to see new things because you can see anything you want to on the internet. But with the times that I've gone, preview night is relatively low. So it's still kind of fresh. It's at nighttime, so a little bit of cooler air. It's not like, you know, the blazing heat is making everybody just sweat out their, you know, pits. And then Thursday, most of the time, I've slept in, and I tend to go around maybe lunchtime. And so by the time I actually get there, a lot of people have left to go eat lunch, and so it's actually a little bit less crowded. Then I hang out for a couple hours, and then I'm done. So it's actually quite a pleasant
experience.
He
doesn't do things the way.
I'm not a Friday or Saturday hardcore 8 a.m. to closing
time. No, I'm
not
8 a.m. either. But I like to
see
everything. I like to see. I mean, I go through. And Josh is right. There are booths there that have been in the same spot every year. Like his wife, there's a booth that they go to for her what's the creator who does these statues? It's a given they're going to go there.
Yeah, the Claybermore statue thing, seeing a couple of artists, see if they have anything new and stuff like that.
But there is always something, at least one or two things that always catches my eye. I'm like, oh, I didn't see. And especially you have now that it's not just comics, and I think that's the downside for the comic book people, is it's such a media event. You have one section in the corner that's all video games. You have another section that's now taken over, which are the movie and TV shows, and they're trying to get hyped on these new pilots. And there's this whole aspect that I've never done, which is actually go to the panels that I tend to watch on Xbox After or whatnot. That might be fun at 1.1 year to actually do.
And that's what I would kind of like to do. I'm getting to that point where I would just like to do those things. Because
it takes up a day.
Yeah, there's one panel I've always heard about and wanted to try, but I've never made it to, obviously. It's almost like, you remember the show Whose Line Is It Anyway? You know, for the improv show with Drew Carey and stuff. Well, they have that, but with artists. So you sit there and you have like these, you know, four or five artists that are like well known. I don't, you know, whoever they are. And you sit there and someone goes like, okay, give me a place. And like, you know, people go, barbershop, you know. And okay, what are they doing in the barbershop? Making hot dogs. So you have to sit there and they're okay. And they're having to draw this kind of funny comic. And it's like, who's doing it? So it's like Bugs Bunny. And, you know, so you're just, they're doing this comic. Of, you know, per what everybody else is saying.
Man, that sounds nerve-wracking. To be that person? Let me draw.
It's a drawing?
Let me draw anything you can think of.
You're a good artist.
Exactly. And so, like, you know, they have it up, and, you know, you're watching them draw, and it's kind of fun to sit there and watch them draw, and then after someone's just like, here it is, and then everybody's kind of, like, laughing or clapping and stuff like that. And then I think they auction them off.
For, like, charity or something?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I just think you get some good insights into things. I would have loved, you know, if you're a fanboy of anything in particular, you can maybe. I mean, some of the Disney does their own thing now, so they have that Pirates thing locked down. But say somebody like me who loves Blade Runner, a couple years ago, before they did the digital release, they had almost everybody who was still living in the cast up there alive talking. And that to me, I had a watch on Xbox, but I would have loved that time to sit and talk. People who were into Avatar, I mean, they showed a huge section of that movie before. So I think if you have the patience and maybe have a big enough group of friends to sit and hang out with to kill the time, because the lines for those halls are huge, dude. I mean, they're huge. And people line up the day before even to get in there. I think if you have that patience, that experience could be worth it, depending on which panels are there, because they do make, I mean, the big actors show up. It's not like they put in the B team. Sure. If Iron Man's there, Robert Downey's going to be there, and he's going to get up and do something funny. And, you know, the A team comes out to Comic-Con now because that's their base for these. And those people are the bloggers, the Nerdtastic in 3D, the people who are like underground word of mouth that actually gets these movies popular, you know, to another whole subculture. So that in itself is cool, but I've never done it.
Yeah, no, and
the lines look so long, I just never do it.
There's an awesome documentary, too. It's called, what is it, A Fan's New Hope?
Yeah, yeah, Josh. I had heard about it, and then Josh got a copy, and then I've since seen it, and now with the power of Plex, it's up there for our group, and it's really, actually, you should watch it to get an idea.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a really good take on it follows multiple facts. Like, I would love to see The Masquerade, too. I was talking to Fennel about that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That'd be fun.
They do one of the things that's pretty cool is they do a cosplay Masquerade Ball, and it's a huge deal. For Comic-Con, it's a huge deal, and it's basically people enter a year out, and they're like, this is what I'm going to do. Can I get into the ball? And you basically get a section of time up on the stage with whatever your costume is or group of people are dressed as. And then you know they give awards at the end of it, and it's in a huge conference hall, and it's a pretty big deal. And the movie, you know, follows what characters were they?
The it's the characters from
Crisis?
No,
it's a video game group.
It's killing
Josh.
Me.
Come on,
I know.
I'm horrible.
Shepard,
Mass Effect.
Mass Effect.
It's
thank
a Mass
you.
Effect. So the dragon slash Grimlock looking big dude who's in Mass Effect. I don't know who his character is. The one chick makes him with a servo, and so somebody's even dressed as that with an articulating mouth when he talks. I mean, dude, it's when they got out there, I was like, okay, this is fucking.
And they
impressive.
Did all this stuff like in their garage, and it was kind of showing.
She wants to do that,
yeah.
And they had a whole stage production that they put on it, and it's cool. You know, it's not no spoilers. It's just you should see how cool this is. So that's something I've never seen. There's like I said, there's all these little facets that I feel like I go to Comic-Con and I look at me and I'm like, well, I don't have the time. But at the end of the day, I just need to go, hey, I want to do that this time.
Yeah. It follows like artists too, like trying to do their portfolios. Because, you know, back in the day,
that's a big thing there,
though. Portfolio thing. Like you'd go and show off your work for a job and stuff like that. And they have it now, but it's, you know, you go and sign up and then you wait for your name to get called. And then you're in there for 5 minutes, you know, looking at them. And it's just like, you know, oh, this is too much. And this is this. Can you draw like this? And
they do like panel reviews. So each comic company will have a panel review. And it's interesting in the movie because they show two different people. They show one who eventually gets a job and one who struggles. And it's funny because it took me back to when I was trying to get a job in the industry in CG and going to like when SIGGRAPH was the big hiring fair, and you'd go to booth to booth, and you'd hand your stuff over, and you'd look behind them, and they had huge Rubbermaid bins of just reels, and that still exists very, very much so, and I know it does. I don't see it firsthand, but anytime I've talked to anybody in HR, I mean, we get, especially at DreamWorks and same with Disney, we get thousands of these reels daily now. And back in the day, you used to have to do that at a convention. And SIGGRAPH, for us, our industry, that was the big place to go. You'd go to SIGGRAPH to be like, dude, I can meet the guys of ILM. Oh, my God, Digital Domain's going to be there. ImageWorks is going to be there. I got to get a job here.
Digital Domain will no longer be there.
Not the U.S. branch. No. But, yeah, it's – and I guess it's the same for Comic-Con. That's an aspect I've never, you know been a part of or knew anything about until actually this movie. But it's cool because they also talked to a bunch of actors who are all into it and their experiences. And it's a cool place if you're into, like, seeing stars because there's just people everywhere. I mean, there's people nonstop. You look to your right and you're like, oh, God, that's that person or that's that person. So for people who are wanting to go, it's a cool experience. And the city's awesome. You know, the city turns into this cool nerd place during that time, which I think is always cool.
So we're going to announce something very, very fun, which is we're very, very happy. This is an exclusive. I don't know what that
to,
means.
To the show?
Yeah. So we are going to announce a little bit of a contest that we are going to do, which is Nerdtastic in 3D will be attending E3 and will also be attending Comic-Con. I think we've established that at this point. If you, anyone listening, comes up and finds us, we are going to bring you on the show.
Okay.
Fair. Your expense is not paid.
No, expense is not paid, but you will be welcome to come here on the
show.
Are we gonna
wear shirts?
We will wear identifying, yet-to-be-determined markers that will allow you to come find us. And all you have to do, is come up and say, "Hello, I listen to your show, and I want to be on it."
All right.
I like where your head's at.
That's it. You do
now,
that,
now can
and
we,
you're guaranteed
can
a spot.
Can we legally, because I was going to say we can even one-up it. Could we legally get away with Josh saying we can maybe even do lunch with this person?
Yeah. Why don't we not say this part out loud?
Okay.
But we would love to have you for lunch somewhere.
Somewhere. And it may or may not be a place.
That's cool.
That is cool.
We may take you to Chick-fil-A. We may not.
Okay. One, I would love to go to Chick-fil-A if we're going there.
Let's not say it out loud. Okay. But let's just say you're going to want to have lunch with us the places we have lunch, they're pretty cool.
Yeah.
They're pretty cool.
Take our word for it on that. You know what, Jay? That's an awesome idea.
So come up with us. Come chat with us.
And it could be when you're in the Los Angeles area. But we will bring you on the show.
Absolutely. At some point. In fact, you know what? You don't even have to be in LA. We'll Skype you on. We'll have a show with you. We'll learn about you.
Now, the one event's not very fair.
Two events. E3.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. Okay, so the E3 event is clearly seeing me how hard it is to get in. If you don't work in the industry, it's going
E3
to be harder.
Industry only.
Comic-Con, too. Comic-Con as well.
No. Comic-Con, though.
You can buy tickets.
If you haven't yet, that's going to be tough for you now, too.
I'm saying this is someone for who already has
tickets. But
if
you're in San Diego, even if you see us in San Diego during Comic-Con.
We're going to be interviewing
people. I'll tell you what. If at any point in your life
you see
me and you say, "I've heard your show and I want to be on it," done. This is an extended offer.
Ta-da. That encompasses it. And that's a lifetime. That is a lifetime challenge.
That's a lifetime guarantee.
That's a lifetime guarantee. If you see Jason Carter.
No. For right now, this would be specifically for if you find us. We will wear T-shirts of some sort that identify us as Nerdtastic and 3D crew members and come up to us.
When is PAX West?
August, I believe. I believe it's like late summer, early fall, somewhere in that time frame.
And we'll try to make it there.
Early goal?
Maybe.
It's up in your neck of the woods that you love so much.
It is. It's up in the Northwest. It's beautiful up there.
You think the ladies will let us go?
Probably. I think the ladies will probably go.
I think if we go with you, yes.
Yeah, maybe true. One other tiny bit of news, if we could cover real quick, which I have not a lot of knowledge on, but yesterday
they've cured polio.
No, but they have actually, I believe, cured AIDS, HIV. Have you heard this? There are 14 adult human beings and a couple of children that supposedly are now HIV free, and they had it. They had tested positive for it at one point in time. Don't know any more news
for
about that.
For HIV,
but, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. The human something virus. Immune system? I don't know. I'm not going to guess. Anyways, so more important news than they've cured HIV is there's a first-person...
and polio.
There's a first-person shooter Walking Dead game.
Yay!
It's like the same thing. Pew, pew! Pew, pew!
We're big fans on the show of the Walking Dead franchise, and I have to say a first-person shooter seems interesting, although I've heard so little about it, it scares me.
It's...
I don't know what to think. I feel like most of the zombie games now feel very similar to me, which, if you're into them, they're fine. I feel they all blend in each... They all feel Left for Dead for me, which is cool if you're into that. I know one of the things you mentioned, this game in particular would revolve around the cast, and it wasn't as maybe generic as the Choose Your Own Adventure game that's popular that got the nerdy this year.
Oh, right, yes.
So this is much more specific to the TV show.
Yes. There's not
which I'm a fan of. I think all of us are a fan of.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's been getting good. Like, at least I like it a lot.
I've only seen through season two, so don't say anything.
Okay. I don't. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. You know me, man. It's kind of. If it's at your house and I come over and you have it, I'll probably give it a go. I would need. I'm the Midwest guy. I need some friends to really be like, this game is just. You need to play this.
Truthfully, so do I. And I usually have a couple of trusted aggregate reader news site things that tell me, hey, this is an awesome game, or hey, check this out, or, you know, some press. There's been so little, it literally scares
Who's
me.
Who's making it? Do you know?
Terminal Reality, I believe, is the name of the company. I'm not sure who's publishing it. I don't know any more news. We can probably tell you with the click of a button or three. But it follows the story of the character Dale, who is one of the character with the crossbow, if you've seen the show, and his brother.
Merle?
I don't know.
Merle!
Is it Merle? I just know he's played by Michael Rooker.
Yes.
But
he's a cool character.
But it follows those two characters during the time frame, basically right before the show sort of starts. It's during the time frame where, in the pilot, Rick is in a coma.
That's when. Okay, so it starts at their beginning of wondering what happens with them all the way till. Do they tell you when?
They don't. And I don't have any links, unfortunately, to get more information.
So a lot of hunting squirrels. Fishing.
And I'm guessing zombies.
And crossbows.
Yes. Yes. So I'm curious if anyone out there plays it, come up and say, I've played.
Is it out? When is it supposed to be released?
It was released yesterday.
Oh, so it is out.
Yes. So if anyone's played it, come up to us and say, because it got so little press, right?
Tam and Josh play it tonight.
If you've played it, come up to us and say, I've heard your show. I want to be on it. And the Walking Dead game is cool or not. Say those things and you can come
any
on.
Any of you guys red box other than Kearney? Okay, here's the one good thing about Kearney. Damn sure he's going to play that game.
Yeah.
Kearney plays. I wish he was here so I could tell him this. It's impressive. Kearney plays a shitload of games.
Well, he's a fan of the industry. He's a game designer.
Well, sure. But still, can you find that many games entertaining? I just feel like you never get into any of them because you're never really playing them more than like, cool, next. Cool. Next. But you know what? I always find that fascinating with people who play.
Well,
like,
let's be fair. The level
hundreds of games.
The level of investment that you put into your favorite game is a year long commitment until the next one comes out. Because I would say you're probably right. The mentality is that it a little bit with certain people. I'm not naming any names. That there's a shiny toy. Ooh, shiny toy. Cool. Ooh, shiny toy. Cool. I'm somewhere in the middle where a game will capture my attention.
Some games you'll play for a while, though.
Yeah, it's true. And there are games I'll definitely go back to. But, like, for me, it's not a game has to have enough appeal for me to want to play it at least twice.
Sure.
Meaning if I play through a game and it's fun, great. But a game that, you know, I try and only buy games or get into games that I know ahead of time or have enough exposure to via press or whatever that I know I'm going to want to play through more than once. So.
Do you like to say via or via?
Via.
Oh, this one is.
You just is done it, that curveball
is
out there.
Is it data or data?
Josh LaRotte.
Is.
Come on. I asked you a question.
What'd you say? Data?
Answer it, you son of a bitch.
Data? I think it's data.
Data or data?
Data.
It depends on what we're talking about.
All right. Information.
Data was on Star Trek. I'm collecting data.
Ladies and gentlemen.
No. I don't know. The video game thing, it's funny, I guess, with me in general, and this has nothing even to do with Call of Duty, what I've found, because there's been other games, believe it or not, I've played. It was like that with FIFA for me, and it was like that with DJ Hero for a bit as well, and Rock Band for a bit as well. When I get into playing it, I all of a sudden find myself really into playing it. Like, and this could be any of those games. I find myself wanting to be good at it.
Wanting to build a city.
Exactly. SimCity is the same way. Which I'm the one guy who talked about that.
Nudge, nudge. Do you know what I'm talking about?
it not working?
No, I'm just SimCity. You already picked up on it.
But you know the irony? The irony is Fennel's the only one I know
you
who
hit him over
that.
The head with it.
Well, no, and I was trying to respond to it,
it's
and
like,
he just wasn't fighting
it. Am I not
it.
Getting the obvious?
I'm like,
reference?
No, wait, I haven't hinted at the thing you
no,
picked
no, no,
up
no,
on.
No, 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 I was saying the irony is the one person who talked about me, I played the beta and I was all into it. I didn't purchase it. Sean Fennel purchased it, and he's been playing a bit. People have been hitting me up about Dan Camp even hit me up about the server errors and if I had run into that and stuff. I actually haven't played it. I need to buy it. That's just something that I haven't purchased. It's an expensive game. It's a $60 game, which I guess is normal, but I just haven't bought it.
Yeah, for PC, it's usually
But no, that's another game, though, Jason, too. But that what I like about that game is I feel like that's something in the background I could just leave going, and I don't have to get terribly good at it because it just – it's an evolving game.
Yeah.
FIFA, and not so much DJ or Rock Band, but you could. I feel like to me, to get I have to play them to get good, and I want to play any of these games to get better. And if you sat me in a room and Halo's all I had, I would internally get very competitive till I got good at it. And the first time I ever played Halo, that's when I literally – we started playing. It was a girlfriend's little brother. We crashed at their place up in Big Bear. And I was spending the night in his room. And he's like, sweet. And he was 13, 14. He's like, we get to stay up all night. It's awesome. And the mom literally brought us in cans of soda, moon pies, and chips. And my girlfriend at the time was like, kids have fun. And I was like, what are we doing? He's like, I got Halo. I'm like, sure. I'm here in this cabin in Big Bear with nothing. I'm playing Halo. Dude, I stayed up until like 9 the next day to get good, and it wasn't until like 7 where I was like one of the top guys, but there was a sense of accomplishment. That's how I get, like, I couldn't, like, and it was the same if you gave me Lego Harry Potter or Lego Star Wars, and that was the only game I had to be, I would want to be the best damn Lego Harry Potter player that's ever been. And I think why don't play those single players that much is because there's no room for me to get better at it. It just is what it is. You play a story straight through, and you know there's limitations.
Not, there's not, let's say, a gigantic leaderboard for collecting Lego studs.
Sure, and there's something to that that doesn't attract me. Magic missile. I'd go back to the video of Jason just doing 360s.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Nerdtastic in 3D, episode number 55.
Six.
I went the other way. See what I did? I did that intentionally this time.
So
I did. 56.
So
my name is Jason Carter.
I'm Jack Eckler.
I'm Josh Pico de Gallo LeBrat.
And for now, the real intro. What's up, suckers? That was fun.
Suck. Bye.
I gotta get my normal. Suck.
Did you hit the damn button?
Nerdtastic. 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 In 3D.